This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Salman Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Also joined by Paul MD at Rocket Intellect on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Doing good. It's good to be back. In a while.
We are back. It's been 2 weeks since we podcasted. It's been goddamn like a year since we've had Paul on the pod. And it feels good. It feels good to be back. It feels good to be recording with you guys. I'm a little bit sick right now, but we'll soldier on. Yeah, it's just been too long. I've had to move, so it's as anybody who's had to move, it's you're just incredibly busy. You have to do a lot of stuff. You have to
call, no, it's fun and easy.
No, you have to call a lot of people. You have to get a lot of stuff done. It's just a headache. But yeah, no more excuses. We're back. Couldn't be a better time to podcast. This team is incredibly relevant right now. Let's go ahead and start with the top news. Luka Mbamute out 2 to 3 weeks with a shoulder injury. This is pretty significant. Thankfully, it's not as bad as it looked when he originally went down. Like, it looked like it could have been like a few month injury when he went down. Like, I thought he hurt his knee at first, but thankfully, the Rockets got off easy. The diagnosis is that he dislocated his shoulder. There was no structural damage, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, and he should be good to go in 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, that was a big relief when I saw that it wasn't more serious than that.
Yeah, it's kind of like when Luke went down, I realized how fragile the situation is in terms of competing with the Warriors, because you're like, oh, man. Like, our seventh best player went down. If he's out for the season, we're absolutely screwed. We need him. And that's not normally the case for normal teams. Like, you can't afford to lose anybody in the normal rotation if they're going to, like, compete with the Warriors.
Isn't that crazy? Well, like, this team is going to be greater on a totally different scale because of the way they're winning. They've done that for themselves. That's a good thing. They're going to be judged by how they compete with the Warriors, and an injury like this is actually very, very significant, because the way they structured their offseason was to tackle the Warriors, and Luka Mbamute was one of those signings. The Rockets wanted to switch more on defense. They wanted to play small ball a lot more against the Warriors' death lineup, and Luka Mbamute was a signing that I loved at the time. That could help the Rockets do that. And when he went down, I had the same thought. Like, I was like, oh, man, like, when do the Rockets play the Warriors? Like, I hope Luke's back by then. Like, it's like, that's kind of the most interesting thing about this season at this point, because they're winning so much that we're just waiting for these marquee matchups, and we're hoping everybody's healthy so we can see just how good they stack up against the top teams in the West.
Yeah, and the timing on that is going to be pretty tight. If it's 2 weeks exactly, then he might be back in time for the first Warriors game, but we have to kind of assume he probably won't be, but he should be back for the second Warriors game.
Right. The Rockets play the Warriors on January 3rd, I believe, or it might be January 4th. Either way, it's right in the middle of that timeline, 2 to 3 weeks. Like, that's a little bit past 2 weeks. So if he comes back, in 2 weeks, that should be good. He should be good to go for that game. But I mean, it's okay. As far as the long term goes of this team, the Rockets really dodged a bullet here. In the meantime, how will the Rockets be able to, you know, make up for those minutes? That's 22 minutes per game of rotation players that you're just going to have to scrap together. I mean, like where do the Rockets find those minutes?
I mean, we know where they will find the minutes. They're gonna carve them out of the other eight players in the rotation. They've already kind of talked about this, that they're gonna have some other guys play a few more minutes here.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous to play an 8-man rotation in the regular season, though.
But that's what's gonna happen. It's crazy. I mean, like, I guess, like, Ryan Harrison hasn't really played 30 minutes per game yet, so I guess has he? I think he's played like 28 or something. I guess you can bump him up if you can afford to bump him up a few more minutes per game. PJ Tucker, I guess you can give him a few more minutes. What worries me is I don't want to tack on 2 minutes on Trevor Ariza, because he's already played a lot of he's already played 35 minutes per game for pretty much the last 3 years in a Rockets uniform. It just feels like a delicate balancing act. I don't think the Rockets are going to try giving those minutes to Harden, because I just think D'Antoni understands by now that, like, you know, we probably should be using this luxury we have in Eric Gordon and Chris Paul to, you know, take that burden off of Harden. I think they're going to be smarter about that this year, even with injuries. But yeah, I think it's going to come from, as you guys said, from the other guys. It's going to come from PJ Tucker. It's going to come from Ryan Anderson. It's going to come from Trevor Ariza. It's going to be by committee. But yeah, the Rockets are kind of rail thin right now. Like, and we were talking about this in our group chat yesterday, man. Like, they're playing a nightman rotation as is, and as you said, Paul, they're gonna shorten it down to an 8-man rotation. And yeah, the Rockets, like, as far as the trade deadline, like, this might be something to go after, like going after another guard or going after maybe even another wing to, you know, lengthen that rotation, because the Rockets aren't even playing garbage time. Because,
yeah, man, yeah, I have thoughts about that. They need to get some more mediocre players. Their bad players are so bad. Like, I get that they need to pull the starters out more. They definitely need to pull starters out sooner. But having watched a bunch of these blowouts, you know, having seen what happens when they bring in that garbage time lineup, I watched that Denver game. I saw them give up like 18 points of that lead in literally 3 minutes. It is bad. They really need some guys who do not expect to play every night and are going to be happy to be there and aren't just total crap. So I don't know. I don't want to, like, malign the 10 to 15 players on the Rockets bench, but they just give up every lead immediately. They need some guys who can play some decent minutes in a pinch. They need mediocre players. They need some, like, medium to poor guys that they can sit on the end of the bench and bring in and not just forfeit every game.
Yeah, this is kind of the problem with having, like, a glorified recruiter fill up a roster spot in Bobby Brown. Like, kind of makes you wish you had someone that could actually play professional basketball, but, you know, we got Chris Paul, so whatever.
It's definitely worth it. They just need to find out a way to also have a guy who can play. I mean, it's real bad. I mean, like, if Troy Williams were healthy, maybe he would get some minutes, but I'm not even convinced then. Briante Weber and Demetrius Jackson are they're not. If one of them was giving something, maybe it would help. But yeah, if Bobby Brown up there has to figure out how to be an NBA player, or they have to replace one of these guys with someone who can play.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the best player in that garbage time rotation is Tariq Black, which is the Rockets' intended third string center. It's looking real ugly. I mean, I guess the Rockets can try playing Eric Gordon in those minutes. Perhaps get some competent guard play in garbage time. But I mean, even then, like, I still think the Rockets need to find a fourth guard. Like, they're probably going to be on the market for one as soon as buyout season starts happening. But, like, yeah, I mean, this is kind of why the Rockets went after guards when Chris Paul went down. Like, it wasn't just a temporary issue. This is a long-term thing for the Rockets. Because, again, the regular season for a team as good as the Rockets who want to make a deep playoff run, like, these garbage time rotation minutes, like, they're important. Like, I know it seems like first world problems, but that's kind of the benefit of being a team of this caliber, is that you can rest your starters and be fresh for the playoffs. And the Rockets can't afford to do that because, as you said, Forrest, they're blowing these leads whenever they play the garbage time units. Like, and like, I wish somebody would just ask Mike D'Antoni if that's the reason. Like, if that's the reason, go ahead. Like, I think Rockets fans would understand. But like we haven't.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to throw his guys under the bus, though.
Right. I mean, and if that's the reason, that's perfectly fair. I just wish someone would ask. Like, I just wish that. I don't know. It's annoying to me that we haven't got a solid answer on that. Like, on why it takes so long to pull a start. If that's the reason, that's a good reason. It's a pretty damn good reason. But I mean, just ask. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me who's annoyed by this. But yeah, I mean, this is the definition of first world problems. As I said earlier, this is something. This is probably the Rockets' biggest concern right now, other than Luka Mbamute's injury. It's that, you know, they just can't get competent garbage time playing time. Like even the Warriors, like, they have Nick Young and they have Zaza and they have David West. They have those guys playing garbage time for them, and it fills out. It actually works out pretty well for them. And the Rockets don't have guys like that. They have Zochi, they have Troy Williams, they have Tariq Black, Bobby Brown. It's really ugly out there for them. But let's go ahead and get to the second biggest news item. This LeBron to Houston stuff is starting to bubble up, man. Like, it's starting to become a real thing. Like, people are talking about it more and more around the league. Sam Amick came out with a story for USA Today. And if you guys don't know Sam Amick, he is probably one of the five most credible reporters in basketball today. Like, he's legitimately that good. He came out with a story today about rival executives believing that the Rockets have a chance at LeBron James, and that people within the Rockets organization actually believe that they have a chance at landing LeBron James. Yeah, this is starting to become a thing, man. People are writing about it more. People are talking about it on television. It's like the Rockets might be one of the prime suitors for LeBron James this summer. That's kind of crazy. Like, it's just nuts.
If it happens, there's one person the Rockets should thank for that, and that person is Kevin Durant. He opened that door. He opened that door wide open. You could never have done such a thing before Kevin Durant went ahead and was the biggest front runner of all time.
I thought you were going to say they can thank me, but Kevin Durant works too.
Well, they can thank you in private later.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a realistic possibility. Like, the Rockets are the only team that LeBron can go to, except, like, I guess the Spurs, where you can honestly say you would have a chance to beat the Warriors, like a legitimate chance, not just like a I have to go nuts to beat the Warriors chance. So The Lakers sounds kind of ridiculous to me because, like, it's completely location and business related. Maybe LeBron doesn't have an interest in winning a ring, or maybe he's delusional, but I don't think he's either one of those things.
Yeah.
So I don't imagine the Lakers being an option, to be honest.
Yeah, thing we're supposed to accept that LeBron is going to sacrifice, like, the last few years of his prime so that he can help, like, Lonzo Ball become the next big star in LA or something is just ridiculous to me. Like, if he were to go there just because he really feels like playing out the string in his career, I guess that's one thing, but he's not playing out the string. He's still, like, the best basketball player in the world. Why would he want to do that? I think that people have correctly confirmed that the Rockets, as you said, are his best chance to topple the Warriors if he can't do it where he is. And spoilers, he can't. So it makes a lot of sense from a roster fit perspective. It doesn't make a lot of sense from a salary perspective, but, you know, weirder things have happened. We've kind of learned over the last several years that when a player wants to go to a team, they'll figure out a way to get on that team, especially if they can be a free agent. So, With the exception of Melo, who was almost sort of a free agent, but not quite. Thankfully. Yeah, so I think it's definitely quite possible. I would say, obviously, it's so far out. Don't start counting chickens before eggs and all that. But yeah, there's reason it's picking up steam. It's because it just makes sense.
Right. And this LeBron to LA stuff is really starting to bother me. Like, who the hell started this rumor? Like, is it just that he's buying houses out in LA?
Magic.
I don't get it. Like, is it just because they signed a Rich Paul client this year? Like, I don't get where this is coming from. What major star in NBA history has willingly gone to a young team to finish out his career? Like, I just haven't, it's never happened before. And LeBron, yeah. If you look at his history in free agency, he's always gone to the best place he felt he could win. And what about Los Angeles tells you they could win? Like it's one thing.
But they have these visions dancing in their head of like Westbrook and Paul George and everyone in the world. Like everyone's going to go to the same team all together. It's Lakers exceptionalism, which is never really going to die. They could be the worst team in the league for 10 years. And the minute they win 50 games, all the fans are going to start crowing about that they always believed. That Lakers fans don't go away. They just go into remission. So I think it's not surprising. The Lakers are always going to get a ton of press. They're always going to get a ton of hype. They're always going to get a ton of people theorizing at what's going to happen there. Everyone's going to assume every free agent wants to go to the Lakers because a lot of them, you know, love the Lakers and love them growing up, and a lot of the people spreading rumors love the Lakers and love them growing up, and a lot of people spreading rumors are probably Magic Johnson or employed by him. So let's look at who this serves. Who would it serve to have rumors about LeBron going to LA? Well, people who want the LA Lakers to have a lot of hype. That's probably who's spreading it.
Right. And to be fair, we have no idea what the Lakers are going to look like in 6 months. We have no idea what the Rockets are going to look like in 6 months, right? Like we're just way too far away from anything free agency next summer related to even make a definite conclusion. I just think it's kind of odd. Like maybe if you get Paul George and even try to get LeBron, but even then that would take a crazy amount of cap manipulation to make it happen because they have to come off of some pretty bad contracts like Luol Deng and stuff. Like it's just a lot. Like it's let me go ahead and finish out on the Rockets real quick. It's going to take a crap load of cap manipulation to make it happen. And
there it is.
It's not going to be easy. Like if this were to happen, like it would truly be like Daryl Morey's best work of his career. Like if he could manage to bring back Chris Paul, bring in LeBron James, like that would truly be his Picasso. It would just be his, you know, Mona Lisa. It would be whatever you want to call it. It would be his grand coup, like ever. If you could pull this off, if you could get off of Ryan Anderson's salary, if you could get off of Chris Paul's cap hole, like it would just take a lot of stuff to happen, a lot of stuff to go in the Rockets' favor to happen. There are some scenarios where it could happen though, and I think it's best to touch on it real quick. David Wiener of Clutch Fans has talked about this. The best way for the Rockets, and we talked about this on our podcast this summer, the best way for this to happen would be through sign and trade. It would be if LeBron were to opt back into his original deal. He has one more year left on that contract, and the Rockets were to get rid of Ryan Anderson, they presumably have to give up some draft picks to throw away that contract, and Eric Gordon, and facilitate some kind of three-team trade. Like, that's the only way it could happen. It's possible. Like, Eric Gordon's contract looks really good right now. Like he's legitimately, like, he looks like a bargain right now and a pretty damn good player. So, I mean, if LeBron goes to Cleveland and says, I'm leaving, like, Eric Gordon, like, you could do much worse than Eric Gordon as a return, right? I guess that's the case you have to make. Again, we're stretching here. It's probably not going to happen, but it's something to look out for over these next couple of months because, again, Sam Amick is one of the more credible reporters in the sport. At the trade deadline, he's one of those guys you have your notifications on for. He's one of the best. So, I mean, a report from him is, like, just short of a report from Watch. Like, he's legitimately in that tier of basketball reporting. But, yeah. It's significant. Well, it's best that we touched on it. Go ahead for us. What were you gonna say?
Oh well, let me just put a little capstone on this by saying that I liked what Paul you'd said on Twitter at some point. Someone was telling you that, oh well, LeBron won't come over if, for example, the Rockets beat the Warriors in the playoffs. And you said, well, great, I'll take it. So I feel like this is the season we should really be worrying about right now, and there's a lot of good reasons to concern ourselves with it.
Right. The Rockets are on an 11-game winning streak. They are dominating right now. It's not even just like a flukish 11-game winning streak where they win a lot of close games. It's like, yeah, they've had close games, but they've just, like, I think that their margin of victory is like 17.5 or something, like, per game in this win streak. That's kind of ridiculous.
It's like 186 points total over 11 games.
Right, they're just murdering teams. They're just absolutely just murdering. Like after the first half, it's like almost a game. Like it's like after the Rockets go on that little run that we've come to expect, like where they go on that 25-4 run or like 18-2 or whatever. Like after they go on that ridiculous run, after they make their barrage of threes and get their stops. Like it just feels like the game's over. It's like not even worth watching. I came home from a game the other day, like I couldn't watch the first half, and the game was over. And it really bothered me because I was really looking forward to that game. But it's come to the point where if you're not in your seat by the first quarter, and you might miss the game. Like they've just been so damn good at getting down their opponent's throat and not letting them come back up. And it's been on both sides of the floor. They have the number one defense in the league over this 11-game stretch and the number one offense in the league. And right now, they are just a few percentage points off. Last night, they were there of having the best offensive in NBA history. Like, before last night's game, they had the greatest offensive in NBA history. Right now, it's the Warriors of this year, ironically. This team is ridiculous. This is probably the best regular season Rockets team of all time. It's just a shame they're in an era of the Warriors. They've just been killing.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the team probably there's a good chance the team doesn't get formed unless the Warriors exist. Because maybe Chris Paul is like, oh, we still have a chance with the Clippers if Kevin Durant doesn't go to the Warriors or whatever. So you can think... it sucks that the Warriors exist, which I have done many, many times, but you can also think the optimistic way and like be grateful for the fact that the Warriors like greatness has given us this like incredible team that is so much fun to watch.
Oh, it's awesome. Someone asked me the other day if I'd rather watch the Rockets win a close game or win a blowout. And I was like, oh, blowout, hands down every time. I want to be bored. I want the game to be over by a second quarter. And I just want to sit there and eat popcorn the rest of the game.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how they've just like again they've just dominated like and it's like it's gotten to the point where like I can predict like how every Rockets game is gonna go. Like you just know like they have that same outline like what's crazy about this is they found that unit that works. They found that small ball unit that with PJ Tucker at the center, where you know you just play that lineup and it's like, okay, I'm done with this crap. Like I'm done. Like it's the game's over. The game's over. We're not playing anymore. Like it's over. Like they pulled it out in that Portland game, and it surprised me how quickly the game just ended. Like after they put in PJ Tucker at center, how quickly they decimated the lead. And how quickly they just won. Like they found the optimal switches, like Noah Vonleh out there on an island with James Harden. They searched out Damian Lillard a lot on those switches. They just like opposing defenses just don't have any other way to defend them other than switch. And when you switch, there's just few defenses in the NBA that can guard James Harden or Chris Paul on an island. It just doesn't work. Like, and you can't, again, you can't double because there's so many shooters around the floor, and you can't trap because they're such great passers. It's just a really, really tough to defend. And that's why they're one of the greatest offenses in NBA history. And their defense again has been spectacular. It's been otherworldly, especially when they play PJ Tucker at center. They just get a bunch of stops in a row. And they can switch everything. Like they can switch every screen. They can do anything they want. So it's not a one-on-one game. It's really fun to watch. It's really Warriors-esque. And Forrest and I were talking about this before we recorded. This is much like the Warriors before they won their first championship. Like that 67 win team that went on to win the championship. This feels a lot like that. Like this feels a lot like that kind of dominance. Like they feel very, very Warriors-esque in that way.
They have about the same statistical profile of that team, too. they're scary, man. They're like they're like a guy in a bunker with a machine gun. They just keep shooting and keep shooting and keep shooting, and eventually you're gonna get hit. Like every single game, what happens is that sooner or later, the other day against the Hornets, it was sooner rather than later. The other games against the Pelicans and the Blazers, it was later, but eventually they figure out what's gonna put them on a run, like a 15-2 run or something, and suddenly you're down by 20. It always happens. At some point they just break through your defenses just long enough, and then it's done. And once they hit that 20-point mark, you're through, and the rest of the game is a formality.
Yeah, and they have so many like variations of small ball. Like when you think about small ball with the Warriors, you usually think about like, you kind of know what lineup you're talking about: Steph, Clay, KD, Draymond, and Andre. But with the Rockets, you can kind of like, okay, play Rhino at center, play Ariza at the four, or you can play like PJ and Luke at the four and five, or you can play PJ and Ariza at the four and five. And you got like this three-headed guard lineup with Chris Paul and Harden, and it's just really interesting. It's a lot of fun watching D'Antoni tweak lineups and seeing what works and seeing how they can gain an advantage with small ball, because eventually it always comes down to small ball, I think, other than the New Orleans game where Clint just played great against Boogie.
Yeah, that was really impressive. Yeah, it's really foolish of other teams to let them have an entire halftime to put the minds of James Harden, Chris Paul, Mike D'Antoni, and Jeff Bezelic to work at figuring out how to destroy you. They're such a strong third-quarter team, too. They just come out of halftime, and they usually just tear teams apart immediately.
Right. It's like they know when they want to be, like, again, like when, as soon as they put in the small ball lineup, it's pretty much over. Like, because they can close leads so fast. Like, we saw this in that first Warriors game on opening night. Like the Rockets were down by 20, like, I think twice in that game. Like, they just caught up so quickly against the best team in the league, against the measuring stick. Like, they made those comebacks against the Warriors. And like, it makes you feel optimistic against a matchup against them. The one thing that worries me, though, like, their statistical profile is so good. And it's so reminiscent of that 2015-16 Spurs team that won 67 games, had a dominant point differential and net rating. They actually have a similar statistical profile in the Rockets right now. They had like 11.8 net rating, and they never made it to the conference finals because they overlooked. I just felt like everybody that year was talking about a Warriors Spurs conference finals and how that would look, and one team got overlooked, and it was the Thunder of. With Russ, KD, Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, they had like a whole bunch of length and like a whole bunch of athleticism, and they just managed to overlook that team. And I'm kind of wondering what that team is for the Rockets this year. Like, if we're to assume the Rockets are the 2015-16 Spurs, which is not what I'm saying, but they have a similar profile. If we're to assume they're that team, what's the team that we're overlooking? Is it the Spurs right now? Like, is that the team that we're maybe looking like? And I know, Paul, you disagree with me. I just think that Spurs team, like, and Zach Lowe talked about this on a couple podcasts ago. Like, if we're talking about a team that's going to have success against the Warriors, like, that's the only one that has in the past couple years, right? Like, this is the only team that legitimately has something to show for their bouts with the Warriors, and they've had legitimate like playoff success, regular season success. Like, they've won games against this iteration of the Warriors.
You know how
success have they had against the Warriors other than one game?
Half a game.
okay. I probably shouldn't have said playoff success, but they've had regular season success when healthy against the Warriors.
You know how you have success against the Warriors? Be really goddamn good. That's the current Rockets game plan. Look, I think that the Spurs are the only other Big Six team in the West, and probably as Kawhi gets healthy, they will be the third best team in the league. But I don't know. I've found myself getting very tired of these honestly boring takes about the Spurs. Oh, as soon as the Spurs get back, as soon as Kawhi is back healthy, they're going to put up numbers just like the Rockets, which is such a ridiculous thing to say out of hand. Look, they might. They very well might. They're the Spurs. But I don't understand why respecting the Spurs, as we well should, goes from us realizing they're going to win probably 50 to 55 games every year at least, and they're always going to be a major player, to assuming that they're suddenly going to be a historically great team because they added Rudy Gay. They're going to be very good, but I don't understand why we assume they're going to be so much better than they were last season. And last season, they were good. They were not Rockets good. Like, the Rockets were not quite as good as them last season, but they are much better than the Spurs were last season right now. And I don't know where we're assuming that a jump is going to come from. Until otherwise proven, I think we have to suspect that the Rockets will be a tier, or the Rockets will be a tier above the Spurs. They might catch up to the Rockets. We don't know, but I don't know why that benefit of the doubt is being given to them, that they're going to be incredibly good. That's a big benefit of the doubt to give them.
Yeah, because Kawhi, you can't assume that Kawhi is going to be any better because he had zero time to work on his game in the offseason because he was nursing that quad injury, I think.
Yeah, he had a quad injury.
Yeah, the quad injury all offseason. He had no time to work on his game. So why would the Spurs be any better than they were last season? The Rockets are very clearly improved this season. Chris Paul is a Spurs killer. I don't really see any reason to think that the Spurs are like this, like, legitimate threat to the Rockets other than, like,
yeah, I mean, and they might be. They might be, but we haven't been given reason to believe they will be. That shouldn't be the default. The default should be that they're probably going to be a little bit behind the Rockets because that's kind of where they were last season, which is fine. I think that's reasonable. And they'll give Rockets a lot of hard outs, like at least. But it's people just want to believe. I've seen so many people saying, oh, well, the Rockets are pretty good, but as soon as the Spurs are really back, that'll all be put straight. Don't worry about it. And it's so weirdly dismissive to me. I think that people need to be really afraid of this Rockets team. Not even just speaking from like a pro-Rockets perspective, but this team is scary as hell, and they're clocking teams every single night. And like, I don't know what more proof people need, but I guess they're not going to get it.
We got a heated Forrest Walker, man. That's good. okay, listen, like, I am in no way being dismissive to how good the Rockets are right now. I'm not even saying the Spurs are even on the same level as the Rockets right now. I'm just saying I'm not ready to overlook them yet. Like, I want to see a 20-game sample size with a healthy Kawhi, not on a minutes restriction. Like, I just want to see it. Like, I just want to see it. Like, if it's not on the same level as a Rocket, that's fine. Like, then we can dismiss them. I'm just not ready to do that yet. Like, I just respect Kawhi enough. Like, I think he's an incredible basketball player. And I know you guys think so as well. I'm not in no way saying you guys don't think the same thing. I just respect, like, the Spurs for 15 years have been this institution to where when you're not expecting it, they're in a championship race. Like, I just,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'm just not ready to do it. I'm just not, like, and Greg Popovich, incredible coach, probably the greatest coach of all time. I'm just not ready to say.
Oh, you're right about everything. I agree with literally everything you just said, and my diatribe was not pointed even a little bit to you. I was just frustrated at the idea that, like, we're going to assume that the Spurs are better than the Rockets. Yes, if you don't take the Spurs seriously for 1 minute, suddenly they have you by the throat. So you're totally right.
Yeah, and it's important to keep in mind that we can't even assume that the Rockets are going to play the Spurs the playoffs, because, you know, I'm not that worried about playing the Spurs if we have to play the Spurs, but I would rather not. So that makes getting the one seed all the better. You get home court advantage over the Warriors, and you get to play like the fourth seed that might be the Timberwolves or the Thunder in the second round.
The Nuggets. The Rockets
make it past the first round, which is obvious at this point.
We can assume that safely, right?
Yeah.
The AC out West is going to be pretty desultory.
Yeah. And that brings up a fascinating talking point. Do we believe the Rockets can legitimately hold on to this first seed? Right now, the Warriors are tied. Oh, no, the Warriors are up by three. Up three against the Mavericks in the third quarter. They are just right beyond the Rockets, and it's really annoying. It's really I'm just waiting for them to lose because they've been right on the Rockets this entire 11-game winning streak. The Warriors have just been right there. They're on a 7-game winning streak themselves. it's just really, do we expect the Rockets to be in the race for the first seed, or do we expect the Warriors to come in and clinch it at some point?
I don't think there's a strong reason to believe either way right now. It's very much up in the air, but it's totally possible the Rockets can hold on to it.
Well, if you think the Rockets are a 65 plus win type team, and I believe they are based on what I've seen from the Rockets with Chris Paul, then there's definitely reason to believe that they can hold on to the first seed, because the Warriors in all likelihood are not going to like win like 68 games. You know, they're the greatest team ever assembled, but you know, Steph is still going to be out for a little bit longer, and they're coasting and resting guys throughout this entire season. So the fact that the Warriors don't care about the first seed as much as the Rockets almost certainly do is a reason for me to believe that they can hold on to the first seed.
Yeah, which would be huge. Having to play only one of the Spurs or the Warriors in the playoffs would be enormous. It's like a free pass of the conference finals almost, though. You know, you never want to assume anything, but the teams right below the third seed in the West are not quite as scary.
Right. You're right. You don't want to assume anything, but it is a much easier path to Western Conference Finals if you can get that first seed. And when you get there, you get that home court advantage, right? Which I realize that the Rockets' home court is not exactly intimidating, but I mean, it's more the fact that you don't have to go to Oakland for those first two games, right? Like that's the biggest advantage that you get from getting home court advantage in the series, is that you're not in Oakland. Not that you're in Houston, but it's that you're not in Oakland.
I know that the Rockets have gotten, like, the Rockets last year were pretty brutal in terms of like the Spurs series and showing up, but there are legitimate, like, during certain series where they like think they can win, they're legitimately pretty good, because I have been in those, and I've been to like different crowds, and the Rockets playoff scene is actually up there. So yeah,
it's not bad, especially like, against it's not
the
terrible.
Like if it's right. The first, like if the Rockets get the number one seed and like are going into the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors and like playing the opening game, then the crowd is going to be good there at the very least.
They had a very good crowd in the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago. Like it was actually very, it was pretty packed. You could hear
2 years
them
ago. He says
right. you heard them over the television. Whatever, is it 3 years ago? Whatever it was when they made
it's 2 years ago. If you ignore the season that didn't happen,
right? It's 3 years ago. Okay, right. You know, it was very packed. You could hear them over the TV. Daryl Morey talked about this on a podcast recently. Like the Rockets don't have the greatest home court, but in the playoffs, so when they make it deep, it's not as bad as I'm making it. Like I may have over exaggerated that, but yeah. Can we talk about the Rockets in the playoffs? Like in terms of like this thing that's been going around to start the season, like how. Like, we should dismiss everything the Rockets are doing because they have this horrible track record in the playoffs. Like, I'm just tired of hearing it. They lost to, like, a 14-win team or something. They lost to a 61-win team, Spurs team. And I realized they didn't have Kawhi Leonard, and I realized Harden had a really bad Game 6. But I'm tired of people conflating bad playoff game to bad playoffs. Like, those two things are not mutually exclusive. The Rockets and James Harden are actually pretty fine in the playoffs. Like they're good. They're not great, but I mean they're fine. If you look at their average, if you look at James Harden's averages in the playoffs, he's like 28-7-7 on like damn near 60% true shooting. Like that's good. Like I'm tired of people conflating Game 6 with every single game that James Harden played in the playoffs. Like it's starting to become a real tired narrative about James Harden in the playoffs. And I realize he's had some bad moments, but bad moments don't equal bad playoffs. And it's just really starting to frustrate me.
Well, the problem is that they can't shoot threes in the playoffs because they're exhausted. That's for me a thing that's my supposition. That's what I've gleaned from it, and I think was going on. And I think it makes it harder for them to win games than it should. And hopefully this year with a lighter minutes load, which which, knock on wood, we talked about earlier, could lighten up even more. You'll see less of that as a problem. If they can actually hit a goddamn three, then they probably don't get in that situation where they lose game five in a heartbreaking fashion. It's, people like to just ascribe patterns and desires to being real. I mean, remember that Dirk Nowitzki was soft, and you know, he was a choker and stuff for years until suddenly he wasn't. So I think you can't ascribe too much value to all that. People are going to try to see what they want to see, and we honestly just don't really know yet. Also, as an aside, I hate this idea that the regular season and the playoffs are wholly separated, that there's no connection to them, between them whatsoever. Well, they're a bit different, but it's not like, well, who knows? The Warriors are one of the best playoff or one of the best regular season teams of all time, but maybe they're just bad now. If you're a really excellent team in the regular season, guess what? You're going to be really excellent in the playoffs too.
Yeah, and this notion that the Rockets, what series have the Rockets lost that they've been favored in, by Vegas? Yeah. I guess other than the Blazers series.
Right, I was just going to point that out.
Which was, years and years ago.
Right.
When Harden was, 24 or 25. I don't really get this idea that the Rockets are, massive underachievers in the playoffs. They were disappointing in the San Antonio Spurs series by the end of it, but they were playing incredibly well up until that.
And the Spurs were good. The Spurs were better than the Rockets all season. They won the regular season matchup against the Rockets. They probably shouldn't have been favored against the Spurs, but for whatever reason they were, and it made for a narrative that the Rockets the bed in the playoffs, and it just wasn't true. The better team beat them, and Game Six was inexcusable. I don't want to excuse that, but other than Game Six, a better team beat them. Is that so hard to grasp? Is it just that we just expected the Rockets to win that series?
And they were a mono, in game five. Look at how well they played at San Antonio. In games one and games five. They were, in game five, they were a Manu Ginobili time machine away from winning at San Antonio and getting a chance to win the series in game six at Houston, which probably would have changed everything. So I don't really get this idea that the Rockets have been this disastrous postseason team. But even if you want to say that they're this disastrous postseason team, I feel like having an extra star in Chris Paul is kind of helpful.
Yeah, but he's bad, and so is James Harden. They're both playoff chokers. Choke. Yeah, I think it's totally reasonable to have questions about how this team's going to perform in playoffs. There are a lot of questions, but the problem is when you have people who are coming to conclusions already. Oh, well, we know they're going to lose to the Spurs. So why? They're going to lose to whoever. They're just going to choke in the playoffs. Yeah, they got Chris Paul after being a fantastic team, and yeah, it's already working really well, but we know that it just won't work. I think at a point when you get people saying things like that, there's no point in engaging. If it's just a totally uninformed opinion, just based totally on team rooting, that's fine and fun for them, but it's not a jumping off point for discussion.
Right, and what really gets me is when people talk about Chris Paul in the playoffs. I get if you want to talk about James Harden. Chris Paul is one of the best playoff performers of all time. Legitimately.
Yeah, but he hasn't been to the conference finals.
That is so stupid. That is just so stupid, that argument that people make just because he hasn't advanced. Chris Paul can only do so much. One player, I get it. One player has a phenomenal impact on the game in the game of basketball. I understand that. But again, one player still can only do so much. And it's not Chris Paul's fault that his teams have never been favored to win a playoff series that they've lost. There have been a couple bad series here and there with the Clippers, but I mean, largely they've performed up to what they were expected to do. And Chris Paul has played phenomenal in the playoffs. He's one of the I think he's third in win shares for his career in the playoffs. It's insane. In NBA history, he's one of the best playoff performers of all time. It's just stupid to talk about Chris Paul in that manner. Harden's numbers have taken a dip in the playoffs, but again, he's good in the playoffs too. His numbers are not as good in the regular season, but they're still very, very, very good. And defenses guard you different in the playoffs. Like, they key in on you. They scout you for days and days and days. And they know your strengths and weaknesses. They craft defenses just to stop you. And Harden still, amongst that, put up good numbers. Like, the Spurs designed the defense that tortured Harden last year. Like, credit to Greg Popovich, he did a really good job at having Paul Gasol drop back, closing out all the three-pointers, and preventing Harden from getting to the free throw line. Like, that was a legitimately great strategy by the Spurs. But, I mean, even then, it's just an annoying thing with Harden. Like people choose the games they want to choose when they want to talk about his playoff performances. They never talk about, like, when people talk about the Clippers series and they talk about that time you went on the bench. No one ever talks about Game 7 where he dropped like 30 points, 7 assists, and 7 rebounds or something like that. Like, something ridiculous. Like, no one ever talks about that. Everybody talks about Game 6. No one ever talks about the closeout game where they legitimately won and Harden redeemed himself. Like, it's just annoying. It's really, really annoying. People pick the games they want to choose. It's like cherry picking
yes, well,
data.
James Harden is so bad, the only team he can beat is a team led by Chris Paul, who's so bad that he lost to a team with James Harden.
Yeah. I don't know.
Can't worry about it. We'll let it shake out for itself. The thing that really matters is who ends up standing on the court moving on in the next round of the playoffs once the playoffs come around. And not all the people talking on Twitter or whatever is going to make any difference there. It's fun for them to yell about it, and it's fun for us to yell about them, but we're here to talk about what's happening on that court. What's happening on that court is goddamn impressive.
Right, the Rockets are really, really good. And we kind of strayed away from that at the end, but I mean, they are really freaking good. Like, this is one of the best regular season teams of all time right now. Or at least they're pacing that way. They're gonna win 60 something games. Like, right now, they're on pace to win 69 games, which is insane. And they're probably gonna have a 12 net rating or something like that, which is, again, also insane.
Ludicrous.
Yeah, they're probably gonna have the greatest offensive team of all time, or second, or whatever. Which is shameful if they don't. I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, and Harden amongst all this is having one of the best scoring seasons of all time. He's averaging 31.7 points per game on 63% true shooting. That's nuts. He's been incredible this year, and his step back jumper has been, pretty much unguardable. If he's added an efficient three pointer, like a 40%+ 3-point shooter to his game, I don't know how teams are supposed to guard him. He's just been unguardable this year.
Yeah, he's a freaking Jedi out there, man. He's really improved his game. If he can keep shooting like this, and you never know, 3-point shooting is weird. Maybe he's having a great run, but it certainly looks like he's done some work on it. If he can just pull up and shoot a couple feet behind the arc, and it's scary enough that it's actually worth guarding, that's a nightmare for teams. I don't know, when this team puts it all together, it takes a historic team to even stand up to them. And we're going to find out, I guess, pretty soon, at least a preview of what that'll look like.
Right. Like, it's kind of funny watching defenses try to scramble to guard him. Like, because, like, now it's become, like, before it was, keep him out of the paint and don't foul him, right? Now, like, it's just like, okay, we should probably let him get to the paint because that's our best chance of stopping him right now. Like, it's just...
Yeah. Maybe we can hack him and the refs won't call it.
Right. Right, it's funny, like, watching defenses twist and turn to try to guard him. It's like the entire defense is shifted on him, and they can't even double him now because of Chris Paul. It's crazy. Like, he's having an incredible season. He's also, nine plus assists per game, which is also ludicrous on top of his efficient scoring. Yeah, Harden's having an incredible season. I don't want to talk about MVP. We're not talking about that for another couple months. I don't want to get into the headache of it right now. But yeah, he's having an incredible season. The Rockets are 22-4 right now. And yeah, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at RedNationHoops. Follow Forrest on Twitter at DoNot. Follow Paul on Twitter at RocketIntellect. And yeah, guys, good night.
are the ones who know that a little late is always too late, and that the clock doesn't stop just because you're missing a part. Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, and our KeepStock inventory management solutions help ensure you have the right stuff in the right place at exactly the right time. Visit Grainger.com/KeepStock to learn more. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.